Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a bird, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when life and on the air.
Good morning, everyone. I am so excited. The sun is out. It's a beautiful day. This is MJ Network. MJ stands for Marcia Joyce, my sister. And we have the author of I Am So Excited, Dark Paradise, here. Wait till you read this one. Living in a place where there are many people of different races and having to decide where he belongs, as racism is a primary issue, revenge, hate, drugs, love, and unrequited love, sadness, hopes, and the deception and betrayal, as the author of Dark Paradise created a character who I love, with strong moral fiber, strong ethics, the love of people, loyalties to his friends, and the hope to make a difference in the world in places of many races called Dark Paradise. And I am your host, Fran Lewis, and we're about to begin. Good morning, Jean. How are you? And we are so ready.
I'm great, Fran. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. I've listened to some of your shows, and I really enjoy them. And, yeah, I look forward to talking about Dark Paradise and whatever else you think would be interesting.
Whatever comes into my mind. So one thing I was wondering is how come you picked this location? And tell us about Boise, who's becoming one of my new favorite people. And why did he return to the Virgin Islands to find out who killed his best friend? And I could use him, you know, to investigate, you know, other things too. You never know.
Well, yeah, Fran. Well, that's a good question. There were a few reasons I picked the Virgin Islands, specifically St. Thomas. The most obvious one is pretty simple. Minimal research, because I'm from there originally. That's where I grew up. And I lived there for the first 12 years of my life, similar to Boise. And I thought it was a very unique setting for a murder mystery. It doesn't seem like there's a whole ton of things set there, because not that many people are from there, quite frankly. I mean, the islands, you know, between all three of the U.S. Virgin Islands is only about 110,000, 120,000 people. So, and you look at the population of the entire world, there's not a lot of people from that place. So then for everybody else, I thought this would be a unique place to give them some perspective on, give them a little history intertwined with the story, and maybe even get a few people to take trips there and bring some business to the island I'm from, because that's its main business is tourism. So if anybody, you know, says, oh, I want to go see this place, that would be great, too. It would be an added benefit of the story. And when I lived there, it's interesting because it's such a far-removed place that's owned by the United States, but not really looked after very carefully. It gives people there the ability to kind of do stuff they couldn't do in the continental United States, because they just don't have much of a place for us. It's a little island. You can come and go by boat very easily or by seaplane. So there's a lot of drug dealing and shady characters there. Even historically, it's been like that, because St. Thomas was the only island down there that was a fully free port. When the Danish owned it, they were very into keeping it a free port, whereas the British islands were very shut down. They had embargoes, and you couldn't buy anything except British goods under, you know, huge penalties. And, you know, they had all their pirates like Sir Francis Drake and the other buccaneers roaming around. So St. Thomas was kind of this haven for everybody to go there and do their thing. It was a lot of mercantile exchanging going on, and it's got an amazing harbor. So although the island is very small, it's like 32 square miles, this harbor is very deep, and the ships could come right into the port. Even cruise ships now, they come right to the dock, most of them. There's a couple of the biggest ones that can't come in. But it was made for a very interesting and eclectic group of people when I was growing up. And even now, it kept that kind of multicultural diversity throughout its history, although it is predominantly African descent people because of the slave trade. You know, the Triangle slave trade brought so many people to the Caribbean. That is the predominant race there. I know this was a three-part question. The second part was about Boise, I believe, right?
Well, tell us about Boise, but how come he decided to go there to find out who killed his friend? And he didn't, no one wanted to deal with it. That was sad.
Yeah, so what happened is Boise was living in Los Angeles, and he had a life there. He had basically been moving west his whole life, and so his family left the island, you know, when he was a teenager. They had left and gone to the States, basically for economic reasons, because, as I said, tourism is kind of the only thing down there. And so he wound up in Los Angeles eventually, and he was working as an investigator for a law firm. So that's pretty light investigation, you know, stuff like finding dirt on divorcees and things like that for different things, to find out if people are cheating and basic stuff like that. So he wasn't doing murder investigations. He's not a hardcore, like, you know, one of these police detectives like Harry Bosch who knows everything and can tear everything down. So he's a little bit learning as he goes in the story. But he comes... Isis passed away. She died. And she died under... But he started looking into that because the police were convinced she got run over on her bike. And I don't want to go into that too much because I will deal with that in a later story. But she died, and he knows something's not right about it. But basically the police got kind of pissed off at him because he wouldn't leave it alone. And eventually it got to the point where, you know, they told him, listen, you're interfering with our investigation, what we're doing, and making sure everything about this death is kosher. And so he got to the point where he was going to be arrested for interfering with police investigation. So he left because he couldn't keep it off his mind. That's where they fell in love and where they lived. And so everything about L.A. reminded him of that. There's also his mother. She's a huge pain in his ass. And the one place his mother won't live is in St. Thomas, because that has bad memories for her. She doesn't ever want to go back there. So he's like, oh, I'll go back to St. Thomas because, you know, I'll feel comfortable and I can restart my life, so to speak, like get it going again. Because he just felt lost out there without her, and he didn't really have any of his own friends. It was sort of mutual, you know, for couple friends and things like that. Mm-hmm. So felt like he needed a fresh start, so to speak, but in a place where he knew some people. He goes back to see this friend of his, primarily, who's named Roger, and he gets back there and he finds out they haven't been in touch, but he still feels like they would be close. You know, one of those childhood friends that even if you don't talk to him, you walk up to him and within 10 minutes, you're right back where you are. And he goes back there only to find out that his friend has been murdered. And his friend had gotten into dealing drugs, and so the cops basically decided, well, this is a drug deal gone bad. So who gives a crap, right? I mean, it's two drug dealers. One of them killed the other one. This is actually good for us. So he's gone, and that's all there is to it. And Boise obviously didn't feel that way. He felt like his friend... He still thought of him as his friend, so he wanted to find out what really happened. He didn't want just some vague story about, okay, you know, there was a drug deal gone bad and he's dead. So Boise starts investigating the death of his closest childhood friend, and that's the impetus for the story.
Well, who is Gloria, and why does she decide, how does she react to him, and why help him? And then in this story, I mean, those of you that like to get drunk, oh my God, he goes to a lot of bars, drinks to escape reality, and he likes, you know, to drink a lot. That doesn't help at all. So who is Gloria, and why does she agree to help him?
Well, Gloria...
How does he find her?
Yeah, so when he's down there, he starts looking into things, and he finds that Jeffrey had an attorney, as all good drug dealers do, right? I mean, if you're a drug dealer, you're constantly in and out of jail. You know, you need to be bailed out. You need your lawyer available at the drop of a hat, and... I'm sorry, I think I called him Jeffrey. It's Roger. Jeffrey is the person he's based
Roger.
On, but that's another
yeah.
matter. Roger, yeah. Roger, you know, goes there. He's got a lawyer, and Boise eventually finds out who that lawyer is. He goes to see her, and her name is Miguelis Alice. And she, after some coaxing, they have, you know, back and forth, she tells him that Roger's grandmother is still alive, and her name is Gloria. And sort of the natural course of the story, you know, the story, I think, in that there's not that many people that Roger had around that Jeffrey feels that he could go talk to. And Gloria, well, Boise grew up with Gloria. He spent a lot of time with her because she was Roger's, I mean, basically his mother. His mother wasn't around. So whenever he would spend time with Roger, he would be with Gloria. So he knew her well. And he was, you know, Boise wasn't sure she'd still be around because it had been many years. And she, you know, was his grandmother, so she's older. And she was, so he goes to see her, and actually, Gloria is happy to see him. They haven't seen each other in many years, but she's rather cynical about the whole thing. You know, she feels like her grandson became a drug dealer. He sort of got what he deserved. Why, you know, why is Boise wasting his time? But Boise, you know, through perseverance and some guilting, gets Gloria to see that her grandson, you know, might have been might be worth looking into and might have turned his life around at some point. There's no reason to think, you know, he was a good kid and they were friends. And so in his heart, Boise feels like this person had, you know, could have been redeemed. I mean, maybe when, you know, when he got a little older, he would have gotten out of that life, or he, you know, he would have turned his life around. And so with his persistence, Gloria decides, okay, I'll help you whatever way I can. And she kind of points him in the direction of a father figure that Roger had. And that leads to the next steps of the investigation.
Well, there's a character that I really liked. She's quirky, too, Dana. So how did they become a pair and work together? And she was on his case. No matter what happened, Dana was there. She wouldn't let go. That was really amazing.
Yeah, Dana's an interesting character. I like Dana, too. I like Dana a lot. It was fun writing her because she, because of that tenacity she has, I mean, she's a reporter, and she's a Lois Lane type of reporter, right? I mean, she's just, she's a little fireball. She's not going to give up on something she believes in, and she doesn't mind speaking her mind. She's going to tell you exactly what she thinks about the situation and the people involved. And, yeah, she keeps on Boise. They meet because the newspaper, you know, he reads a story in the newspaper and he kind of jogs his mind and he thinks, well, you know, a murder in St. Thomas isn't exactly happening every 5 minutes. So, although, to be honest, there are a lot of murders down there, and that's in reality. I mean, I was just reading the paper a couple weeks ago and they found a body on there's a little island in the harbor, like sort of, some people live there. And anyway, it's a separate island, but they found a body washed up on the shore there. So people do get killed out there actually quite a bit, considering the size of the place. But anyway, he figures there's got to be something in the paper about Boise's murder, so I can start, I can start there. That's one of the first places he goes after finding out about Roger's death. And so he goes to the Daily News, which is a paper that's been there since 1930. So it's a very established paper. It's actually won the Pulitzer Prize. So it's actually a good paper being in such a small place again. So he goes there, and when he walks in, Dana is there. It's early in the day, and she's just arriving and getting in there, and she wants to know what he's all about. And then as they're, talking, he's asking her if she can help him find out about Roger. They hear this big, loud thumping sound from the basement area of the paper, and Boise winds up helping her with this guy who constantly breaks in there and sleeps there. He's a homeless guy, back what we used to call when I was growing up in St. Thomas, a bum. And so Roger kind of helps him in a unique way, and that the result of that is that Dana feels like, oh, this guy's kind of interesting. I want to know more about him and see where all of this goes, and I might get a good story out of this. So she latches onto him and starts helping him, sort of believe in himself and get back on track, because he is a drinker. I mean, he's certainly, if not a full-blown alcoholic, he has the hallmarks. He's on his way. Yeah, so she constantly has to get him up in the morning and get him going. And yeah, she's like the little engine that could for him.
She's good. I like her. But then we have another crazy thing that happens. How and why do they realize that something odd is happening to a young girl, and that they realize that she was kidnapped? And how did they learn about her? And this led them to a pizza place and the kid that was hopefully finding this little girl that was kidnapped. That's how we get to the other part of the story.
Yeah. So there's a girl, and obviously we're not holding anything back here. This is spoiler alerts galore in this interview. But so if you've listened this far, maybe you want to check the book out and then listen to the rest if you haven't read it.
That's right.
Yeah. Yes. The name of the girl who's missing is Celia Jarl, and she turns out to be the daughter of kind of this hotshot guy who's a big real estate tycoon who owns his own island. He's sort of a Dr. No kind of character. He's mysterious. He doesn't show up in public a lot, and he's essentially been trying to take over the island from, in a manner of speaking, by buying up all the real estate. And it's kind of curious what this guy's up to. And Dana, to be honest, how did Dana first hear about it? Maybe you remember, Fran. I don't remember the exact moment she hears. Oh, yeah, it's this guy, Biff. That's right. There's a guy named Biff who she is a source of hers. I mean, she's got sources all over the place. Because, again, she's the type of reporter who just doesn't mind asking questions and is in everybody's face. And people, after a while, they either love her or they hate her, but either way, they're going to answer her questions. So she gets this guy Biff, she gets some dirt from him that a girl's gone missing. And this is after she and Boise are sort of off on this adventure trying to find out what happened to Roger. Oh, yeah. And Biff tells her, because she and Roger are go out to check this one place. These guys are like up to no good. Essentially, they're racist, they're racist, and they sort of have this idea of like leaving around. They want to they're Danish descendants, and they believe that the island still belongs to them, and they kind of want to take it over again. While they're out and checking out this place, Dana gets Boise to come along and help her. They get captured, actually, briefly. They escape, but before they escape, they see that they have another captive, and it's this girl, and they don't get a good look at her, but she's stuck in this shed in the back area of the of the property where they go, and it's out near this place called Hull Bay. It's a good surf spot in St. Thomas where I used to go surfing, and there's a lot of, you know, open space, and the island, for those of you who don't know, is very it's volcanic, so it's very hilly and mountainous, very like a lot of hairpin turns. It's a good place to have car chases and things. So. And everybody drives on the left. You drive on the left in St. Thomas. And so they go out there, and they find this place way out in the jungle, and there's a guy who's growing marijuana. And this is, you know, marijuana is not legal yet at this point. This story takes place back in 2015, and I'm not even sure it's legal down there now, although everybody does it. And so they happen across this guy, and they think the guy's an okay guy, but he turns out to be working with the bad guys who have the house. And so they capture Boise and Dana, and they escape. But like I said, they see this girl, and then they find out from Biff that it's, you know, they basically figure out that it's Celia Jarl, who is the daughter of this, you know, real estate tycoon. And they think it's very, you know, it's very strange. Dana thinks it's very strange that, that Celia could get captured, because, you know, you have to figure this guy has a lot of resources, and the family has bodyguards and things like that. So, you know, they're trying to figure out how this could have even happened. And of course, you can't talk to Cecil, is her father's name, Cecil Jarl. And, you know, you can't get a hold of this guy, and nobody will really talk to him from the company or anything like that. They do finally say that, yeah, you know, that his daughter went missing, and they admit to it later, but they don't really talk at first. They keep it quiet, and, you know, you got to assume maybe they're searching for her, and they don't want the police to know, because it's somebody, you know, some shady dealings that Jarl is involved in that got his daughter into trouble or something like that, which would be logical. It turns out to be a little different than that, but yeah, that's the premise they're going on at first. So they start looking into it, and as you said, it leads them to this pizza place with this crazy character, this crazy guy who is really into being Italian, but, you know, he's a black guy, and he just loves Italian culture. His name's Tommy Scarpetti, which, you know, you got to assume it's not his given name, but he likes the name, and he owns a place called Backstreet Pizza, and he's got a kind of a bodyguard that works with him who's sort of a twinkle, you know, one of those big guys who's really light on his feet, named Little Nicky. They call him Little Nicky, ironically, obviously. He's this gigantic, muscular guy who is basically Tommy's henchman. And but this guy has a soft spot for Dana. He likes Dana. And he's actually a pretty nice guy underneath all the bluster and things. He's really a fun-loving kind of guy. He's, you know, he sits there watching The Godfather and eating pizza. And kind of, you don't really know what he's up to. You don't find out in the story what his bigger picture stuff is outside of the pizza parlor, but you know he's up to something. But he's one of those guys that I think Dane has accepted as a necessary evil and a good source. So she pretty much kind of leaves him alone, and he helps them out a lot with the investigation, the kind of the subplot investigation of the missing girl. Leads them in the right direction, because when they are out searching through the house, they go back to the house after they escape. This is Dana and Boise. And the only clue they find is a pizza box in the refrigerator where the girl was being held. And the pizza box is from Backstreet Pizza. So then those guys say, oh, yeah, well, we did deliver a pizza out to this house in Hall Bay area, which is far away, so it's memorable to them as well. They kind of say, yeah, we don't normally deliver out there, but they were willing to pay extra or whatever, you know. So that then leads them to the next step in the story.
Well, see, Dana, Celia seems to be bent on this man, Earl Deveras. Why? Why did she feel that this doctor was really on her side? Well, what was the story with him, which I didn't like? Oh, my God.
Yeah, well, Earl is, so he's a doctor at the local hospital, and he helps Boise and Dana out, actually, after they escape, because Dana gets a huge wound on her leg going over this wrought iron fence.
Mm-hmm.
So they go right to the hospital, and this guy, Earl Deveras, is one of the, you know, internists, and he does rounds in the emergency area, and so he helps Dana. And then later on, you find out that Earl Deveras, this doctor, and he's sort of an amateur blogger journalist as well, so he kind of hits Dana up about that, saying, you know, if you want to write something for my blog or, you know, anything like that. And she's sort of snooty about that. She's like, I'm not a blogger, I'm a real journalist, you know. So she does have, you know, Dana's definitely feisty. Anyway, Earl, it turns out that Earl is Celia's doctor. And Celia's, you know, Cecil Jarl's daughter, the cousin girl. But he kind of keeps that quiet. They have to find that out on their own. And when they find it out, they confront him about it, and he's very cagey. He clearly doesn't want them to know much about that relationship. And, of course, he invokes, you know, patient confidentiality, like, I'm her doctor, I can't talk about that sort of thing. And then as it goes along, you kind of find out, because Celia, you know, they get Celia away. They get her, they save her. But it turns out Earl was involved. And I mean, do you want me to tell the whole thing? Like exactly?
No. We'll have to read it and find out.
Yeah. But Earl is intricately involved in the kidnapping in a lot of ways, and in other parts of the story, actually turns out to be quite involved. Yeah, in the whole thing. I mean, it's a small place, So.
Well, the other thing I found odd was, how come Dana's not close with her father, but how come she connected with him for a short period?
Oh, yeah, well, her father is a necessary evil for Dana. Again, that's sort of the reason why Dana is, you know, she's attracted to these guys. I mean, and I don't mean attracted, Dana's gay, but she's attracted to them as far as, like, being friends and sources. She kind of, I think she likes her job because of her father, ultimately. Because her father is, he's basically a smuggler. He's this older guy who, you know, he's kind of a smuggler, you know, what do they call him, con man kind of guy. And he's always had problems with that. Dana literally doesn't know her father's name. I mean, his name, she, you know, Boise says, oh, your father's name is Sire, because that's his name, S-I-R-E, Sire, good. And Dana says, yeah, Sire, right. And Boise says, what are you talking about? And she says, I don't know his real name. That's like his latest name. And he said, well, why don't you look him up, his last name? And she says, well, that's my mother's maiden name. He takes my last name is my mother's maiden name. She said, he's like the only guy who ever took the woman's name, you know. He didn't want to be trying to, you know, the shady dude. He didn't want anyone to know who he was. So he's always trying to run from the cops, even when Dana was a kid. So she, but Sire, you know, can be good for things. And in this case, there is a character named Jimbo Briggs. And he starts helping Dana and Boise out because otherwise he'd go to jail, essentially. I mean, they threaten to turn him into the cops if he doesn't help them. So he does. And he's one of the guys who kidnapped Celia. So... but Jimbo works for a guy who's in this character, if you want to know more about him, his name is Frankie Floyd Peterson, and he's one of the main characters in the first short story I wrote about Boise, which was the original impetus for, mm-hmm. you know, I wrote two short stories and then I wrote the first novel. So based on the response to the short stories, I kind of said, yeah, I like this character and people seem to like it, so I'll start writing novels. And in that story, Frankie plays a large role. So if you want to know more about Frankie, you can read a story called The West Indian Manor, which is the mm-hmm. very first short story and the first appearance of Boise. But this guy, Frankie, he's a rough customer. He's basically a drug lord. And Jimbo works for him. Jimbo's his cousin or nephew. I can't remember which right now. But he's related to him sort of distantly. But he's gotten, you know, Frankie's gotten his claws into Jimbo. And now Jimbo is stuck working with Frankie. And he doesn't want to. He sort of wants out of that life. And that sort of mirrors Roger's, you know, existence, maybe how Roger felt. If Roger, mm-hmm. At least in Boise's mind, if Roger would have turned out to be a good guy, he would have, you know, if he had lived long enough and if he had wanted redemption, he probably would have had the same difficulties. Because, you know, they always say about these criminal enterprises, organized crime, mm-hmm. once you're in, there's no getting out. You're in for life. The only way out is you're dead, you know, or witness protection. So I think Boise essentially sees in Jimbo the same thing he'd like to have seen in Roger had Roger lived, that this desire to go make a different life for himself. And so because of that, Boise and Dana help Jimbo. Despite the fact that he kidnapped this girl, he does give them information and helps them with the whole situation, with getting information on how to get in touch with Celia, because once Celia does get found, but once she's found, you know, her father whisks her away. I mean, he basically, like, nobody's talking to her, and he takes her back to his island. And so, but they want to find out what happened. They don't know what happened still. They know that she was kidnapped and now she's been rescued, but nobody's been, you know, no justice has been brought to bear concerning that kidnapping. It's just like, this girl was kidnapped, we saved her, it's all good. And so they want Dana, particularly, I say they, but really the story about Celia is that whole side of things is spearheaded by Dana. And the other side about Roger is spearheaded by Boise. And they often fight about this, about which one takes priority, because to Dana, Celia should be the priority because she's this young girl and she's alive. And then on the other hand, Boise says, well, yeah, but I don't know her. And she's the daughter of this rich guy who has plenty of resources. Why should we be spending our time doing that? When, you know, and she says, well, she's alive and, you know, somebody needs to help her. And Boise says, well, even though my friend's dead, there's always going to be somebody else who needs help. If I keep taking that perspective, I'm never going to solve his murder. So they kind of, you know, fight about that a lot. But anyway, Dana, you know, she constantly wrangles Boise into helping her. So they, to get Jimbo off the island, Dana enlists her father, Sire, who, you know, he drives around on a boat. Nobody knows where he is at any given time, but Dana obviously has a way to get in touch with him if she needs to. She really doesn't like to do it, but she knows he can help him out with this. And when Jimbo shows up, you know, he shows up with a bag of pot. And Dana's pretty pissed off. He's like, what is this? I told you just to bring two bags. And he has three. And then it turns out Sire has insisted on payment from Jimbo. And so Jimbo stole. So now Jimbo's in even bigger trouble if he gets caught, because now he's stolen a bunch of pot from Frankie, essentially, that he's not selling. He's giving it to this guy. And so he really needs to get away. And Jimbo really wants to get off the island, not only to get away from Frankie, because that's the only way he's going to get away, but also the other guy who was involved in the criminal activity with the kidnapping, he is actually, it turns out, it appears, you never know for sure, but it appears that they are in love. That's his boyfriend. So he wants to find out what happened to him, because there's a rumor that, you know, they got to him, like either Cecil or Frankie got to him, because he got off the island. And they were supposed to meet on another island, and now he's told he's not there. I think they were supposed to go to Jamaica, but it turned, you know, and Jimbo is Jamaican by heritage. But it turns out he's not in Jamaica. Supposedly he might be in the Dominican Republic. So Sire's going to take him to DR, and he's going to see what happened to his lover.
Well, before I forget, because I have my list over here, and I want to forget, tomorrow, New York Times author David Putnam, The Reckless, on Thursday, Herbie Pilato, we're going to talk about Mary Tyler Moore, the Mary Tyler Moore story. On the 5th, New York Times author Barry Eisler, The Killer Collective. On the 7th, New York Times author Philip Margolin, The Perfect Alibi. On the 11th, award-winning author Brian Friedman, The Crooked Street. On the 14th, the author of Forgotten Hours, it gets even crazier here. On the 19th, Andrea Kane. On the 21st, this is my own faux pas, Matthew Lee Goldberg, Desire Card. And on the 26th, the other Lee Goldberg that writes Diagnosis, Murder, and Monk. And we're going to talk about the killer thriller. And on the 28th, to end the month, it's all over Facebook, Mission Critical with Mark Greene. And that's just March. My goodness. So
that's a lot.
Let's go on. that shocked me, yeah, because Lee Matthew Goldberg, I thought was Lee Goldberg, and on my Facebook I said, watch out, I'm reading your book, and it wasn't the right book, it was the wrong one. So I read his book, and Desire Card is really good. What would you do if you got a card that said you can get whatever you want, but wait and see what happens when you ask? That's all I'm going to say.
Oh,
and,
interesting.
And Killer
like
Thriller is interesting. It was, and Killer Thriller is about the main character writes thrillers, but they come alive. And whatever happens in his book actually happens, and that's even scarier.
Ooh.
So we have a character in your book named Phil, and Phil, why does Phil want Roger's death not discussed, and who's Elias?
Okay, yeah, that's a lot of stuff right there. So Phil is, as I said earlier, Glor or Gloria, which is Roger's grandmother, she kind of finally gives in and starts telling Boise more about Roger's, you know, shady dealings, which leads Boise to this guy named Phil Gardling. And I named that character actually after a governor of, I think he was the first governor of the Virgin Islands way back in like the 1700s, who had very, under him, well, anyway, I'll just leave it at that. I don't want to go into him too much. But anyway,
okay. Yeah,
so that name it comes from that, though. If you've ever heard of one of the governors of the Virgin Islands, it's the same name. So this guy is kind of, he was the guy that Roger was working for. And he was also kind of a father figure. He, you know, Roger didn't really have a father, as I said. He didn't have a father or a mother growing up. And they weren't dead. They just weren't around. They, you know, they pretty much were just birth parents. And then Glor, his grandmother and his grandfather, kind of raised them. But, you know, as a result of that, I mean, they're older people, and they didn't have the energy to keep a close eye on Roger. So Roger wound up getting into dealing drugs. He wanted, you know, he was interested in a girl, essentially, and he wanted a car, and he wanted more stuff. So because of that, drug dealing was a way, you know, as a teenager, he could get a lot of money right away because his family didn't have much. And he, this guy took him under his wing, so to speak. Of course, we know it's more like he's using him. He wanted mm-hmm. him to deal to his high school, stuff like that. And so he needs high school kids to deal the drugs, and he got Roger into that at a young age. So Phil is a guy that Roger essentially worked for and was his mentor in the drug world and raised him. And so Boise goes to see him, and that's quite an adventure those two have, because there's other rival drug dealers who show up and other things happen once he goes to see him. And he leads him, you know, Boise really suspects that Phil is the one behind it, because Elias, this character, is he's Roger's son, but the mother, Elias's mother, would not let Roger be much involved in Elias's life. And of course, Roger was not very inclined to go to court to get custody or do stuff like that. He's not going to involve himself in the legal system any more than he has to. But Elias, as he was growing up, was drawn to his father. His father was around a little bit. He would make himself known here and there. It's just that his mother would not allow him to live with him or be more involved. But as he got older, Elias did involve himself with his father more and more, of course, until he died, that is, you know. And Elias, you know, helped him find this guy, Phil. Once Boise figures out who Elias is, because he doesn't know, and Roger was fairly quiet about who his son was, because he sort of didn't want him involved in that world, and he also didn't want something he did, you know, to get back to his family. So he was pretty tight-lipped about it. So it takes Boise a lot of work, actually, to figure out who Elias is and how he relates to the story. Elias works at a law office as sort of a legal secretary, and he also is going to school at the local university. The University of the Virgin Islands is there on St. Thomas. And so he's doing both those things, and through surveillance and different things, Boise starts to figure out, he finally figures out who Elias is, and then Elias leads, you know, helps him find Phil. And then between the two of them, Elias and Boise, they sort of wind up being the new Dana and Boise on the Roger side for the latter half of the story. He really helps Boise get to the bottom of things.
I'm going to throw in a question before I throw in the next question. We have about 15 minutes. Okay.
Okay.
I like Dana. I like Elias. Are you going to include them in the next book? Just want to know.
Dana, so far, I'm still writing the book. Dana, so far, only makes a brief appearance in the other book, or a couple brief appearances. She's in it, but she's not nearly as integral to the next book. And actually, the same with Elias. They're both in it, but they have smaller roles in the next book. Boise is making a point in the next book to stay a little more focused on what he's doing and stick to, like, the one, you know, he doesn't want his attention split, and Dana is a master of splitting your attention and getting you to come, like, work on something she's working on. So he's sort of trying to focus on the story, on the situation he's dealing with, the murder he comes across, rather than getting into one of Dana's, you know, news stories. Yeah, so not as much in the second. There's some new characters.
Well, maybe we'll.
There's some new
characters. Maybe we'll find a new girl for him.
Just as much. Yeah, yeah. And I hope you'll like just as much as Dana.
You'll know.
I know. You're not.
Considering
shy about
I read. I read too many books. The only thing I will say, though, is that every time I read about the scenery and everything in this book, I said, like, can you please bring some of it to New York, because we have snow and ice? And I don't like snow and ice. And we don't
right,
need, we've
right.
been getting a lot of it. Yeah, we had it a couple of days ago. But the one thing about living up where I am is they make it go away. really fast, thank God. So we have the lawyer that Elias works for. Why doesn't he want Elias to speak to Boise? I don't like that man anyway.
Yeah, so Patrick Roberts, he kind of wants him to stay out of things completely. And I'm trying to remember, you know, you're catching me a little on that one, his motivation for that. I mean, he's involved with Elias's family, the mom. And the mom really doesn't want Elias fraternizing with anybody on Roger's side of things. And Boise is on Roger's side of things. So that lawyer, Patrick Roberts, he's kind of hell-bent on keeping Becca, who's the mother, keeping Boise out of Becca's business and out of Elias's life. And he doesn't want Elias, you know, he wants Elias to kind of just forget about his father. That's what the mother wants to, just leave it alone. I mean, he was a bad guy. He was a drug dealer. You know, we just don't want you getting involved with those people. They don't want him around Phil Gardeline, you know, and who was his father's mentor and is really good at taking young men under his wing and getting them into that life. And he really he doesn't want him involved at all. And yeah, he's kind of a typical lawyer in a lot of ways, very pushy, and doesn't like to answer any questions and invokes confidentiality all the time. So, yeah, I mean, in his heart of hearts, I think in a lot of ways, Patrick Roberts, he does, in a sense, he wants what's best for Elias from his perspective, you know, but Boise has a different perspective. I mean, he thinks Elias should care about what happened to his father and that, you know, he was his friend. So he thinks your father wasn't such a bad guy. And he's trying to reveal that to him, that it's okay that you care about your father, because Elias does. He's drawn to his father, and it is tearing him up not knowing what happened. That's tearing him up, but he's trying to ignore it and just go to school and do his thing. And Patrick Roberts thinks that's a fragile balance. The lawyer thinks that's a fragile balance. And he thinks that Boise could mess it up, could get Elias back into that and lead him in that direction. And they don't want that.
Well, the sad part is I can understand that, because sometimes you don't know what caused somebody to be dead or why. And I won't say why, but there's, you know, people that in every family, you wonder what really happened. And if you don't know what really happened, it sort of plays on your mind. So I would imagine that even Elias, if he given a chance, he would want to know, like, what really happened to my father, which I'm not going to tell because it's at the end of the book and you have to read it yourself. And who did it and why, I'm not going to say either. As a matter of fact, I left out the name of the character on one of my questions.
Yeah. Well, and that is interesting. I think, I mean, if you've had any kind of an interest, or if you know anything about your family, you almost certainly have questions that have never been answered. And in most cases, if you ask the question, they'll kind of, you know, at least most families, you know, the person who really knows what happened, at least for a few things, will kind of shine you on and say, oh, don't worry about that or whatever. They'll just tell you a lie. And you kind of know deep down, I don't think that's right. Mm-hmm. You know, and, unless your family's totally boring. You know, totally honest, which seems contrary to human nature, you know, you definitely have, I know I had questions like that when my father died. He died a little, you know, weirdly. And then this whole story is based on a friend. I mean, this happened to me. I went back to St. Thomas to visit in 2009, and I went to see one of my closest friends growing up, and he had turned out to have gotten into dealing drugs, and he had been murdered. And nobody could tell me what really happened. And I mean, I didn't turn into Boise and investigate it. So to this day, I don't know what really happened to him.
No, I understand what you're saying. I was in school. I'm a reading and writing specialist, and I'm the dean. And my principal came in, and he says, I need you in my office now. I go, now what did I do this time to upset you? I had a sense of humor. My cousin was there, and he said, you know, your father had a stroke. I go, what, you got to be kidding me? I just spoke to him. My mother spoke to him this morning. We never really found out if somebody, he was in a store working as a manager, and we never really found out if he fell on the sewing machine or somebody hit him. And to this day, nobody really knows. And when he got to the hospital, he was in a coma. In the ambulance, they said he was okay, you know, talking. And when I got to the hospital, he was in a coma. When I got there, the lady that was there said to me, you can't go in there because everyone in this room is going to die. I said, watch me go. I just bypassed her.
Everyone in this
completely.
Room is going to die.
Everyone in this intensive care is going to die. I said, and you want me to leave you there with my father? So they called, I never forget this, they called the guards and everything. And I said, she said it, and they got her out. They didn't get me out. And they brought us, they felt so bad, they brought us lunch and blah, blah, blah. They didn't know what to do for us after that. But then, I mean, I came from school every single day to see that my father was taken care of. And when he died, to this day, I don't even know what caused it. And the police said, you know, it was probably he had a stroke or something. Yeah, you begin to wonder
yeah, that's the thing,
in this
you know,
world.
In these stories.
No, you don't know.
Yeah, in these stories,
yeah.
You know, someone looks into it, but there's countless you know, people must get away with things because it just looks like it's natural occurrence of the world, and they don't check it. I mean, they got lots. You know, the cops have other like gunshots to take it right to look into that they know
yeah.
the murder, and it's very simple to see the situation. Whereas something like pushing someone over a sewing machine, he could have fallen, he could have been pushed. Who knows, right?
Yeah, because they had a cut, and what bothered me was that the pressure was usually there. There was no one there in the morning. So and my father weighed 400 pounds. So you weren't going to, you know, get him. My father weighed 400 pounds.
Right.
It was like, it was just weird. It was just weird, and he was my partner in crime. We used to get in trouble with my mother all the time. It was so much fun. But anyway,
well,
how would you describe, tell us about Dana more. If she, you know, she, how would you describe her personality besides being, you know, go-getter? She's just like me. If she wants to know something, I'm going to know it. And I'm not going to stop until I can figure out what it is that I want to know. So she sort of, you know, is an integral character. How would she describe herself if she could describe herself to anybody?
How would she describe herself? Oh, wow.
How would she describe herself?
She'd be very, I mean, she's definitely not a braggart of any kind. She'd just be straightforward about it. You know, she'd just say, I don't know, I don't take shit from people, and I want to know what's what. I'm sick of lies, and I'm going to find out what's going on, whether you like it or not. I mean, that would maybe be like a short monologue from Dana, you know, about herself. I mean, she wouldn't be one to go on about herself much, I don't think. She's bisexual. She's interested in women. She doesn't hide it. And I mean, part of the reason she lives in St. Thomas is because of that. One thing that's good, like I said, about that island and sort of, even though it's a small provincial place in many ways, in other ways, it's extremely liberal and open because of that, you know, melting pot kind of thing with all, and people who were exiles, as I say at the beginning of the book, like, you know, the former president of Mexico went there in his third exile and escape there because it's kind of a place where there's no judgments. That's why you have, but it's also people are free to sort of do what they want and get away with stuff and be alcoholics or drug addicts or, you know, gay. I mean, when I was growing up, my babysitter, two babysitters, they were two men and they were great. And Dana is that kind of person. She wants to be who she is, and she doesn't want to constantly be dealing with people who are fussy about it. And so she, you know, she lives there. She can be openly gay. She, you know, she meets with her girlfriend. They do things together. Nobody says boo. She just isn't a person who likes to hide who she is, and she's not gonna put up with that from herself. And she's not interested in other people who are doing that either. She kind of talks to Boise in a very direct way, and kind of tells him shortly after they meet what she thinks of him, and who, you know, she kind of breaks down who he is to him quickly. And you know, it's not, he doesn't love that, but he does see in her, you know, kind of parts of himself that are missing, and a directness that he really appreciates. And he values that highly, you know, like what you see is what you get. Person.
Well, before we end, about 2 minutes, tell everybody where we could find out more about you and your work. And the title of the next one is Caribbean Noir Murder Mystery. It's the next one.
No,
so
that's sort
what's
of
the title
genre.
Of it?
Yeah,
okay, what is the title
Caribbean
of it?
Caribbean Noir is called Sweet Paradise. At least that's
okay.
The title right now. I'm hoping, you know, I think I'm going to stick with that title. It's always a working title till the book is published. But for now, it's called Sweet Paradise. And a lot of it deals with a family who was big in the sugar industry and the rum industry.
Oh, nice.
Because they're interrelated, because, you know, you take molasses out of sugar and you make rum with it. And yeah, there's the matriarch of the family, the one who essentially runs the business. She goes missing, and Boise gets enlisted by the grandson to go to find out what happened. Nobody else really thinks anything. The rest of the family thinks, oh, she's like that. She'll just go off and do things on her own and not tell us. And what they're forgetting, they're the children. The grandson says, well, she hasn't done that while I've been alive. He's younger. He might have done that when you guys were kids, but she didn't do that. And I want to know what happened to her. I think something happened to her. So Boise starts looking into that, and it leads them down some interesting paths. It deals with reparations for slavery and the sugar industry, hence the name Sweet Paradise.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so that's the next book. And my website is jeanderoche.com. My last name is spelled DESROCHERS. And my first name is Jean, like Gene Hackman. So that's where you can find out more about the books and me in general. The book Dark Paradise is on good, you know, you can find it on Goodreads, on Amazon, on Kubo, on Barnes & Noble, anywhere you can find books online. And you can always follow me on any of those platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Just search for my name or Dark Paradise, Jean, and you'll find me on all that stuff.
Well, you'd be surprised where you're going to find you. I found myself in Japan, China, Korea, everywhere. And sometimes when I Google myself, I go like, are you really that person? Are you all over the place? You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised.
Wow.
That your book is out there, and you don't even know that the PDF is out there and people are downloading it anyway. But I want to thank you so very much. And
well, if you get the PDF,
when the next
review.
I did give you a review. And
no,
it's
yeah,
on
yeah,
Amazon.
No,
I've
seen people who don't buy the book. Yeah.
Well, people that don't buy the book, you can, if you're reading my copy, you better give me, you know, some feedback over here. But those
yeah.
of you that are reading it and getting the PDF, because it won't kill you to write something nice, ever. I don't write negative reviews. I just finished a book that is very, I won't say the name, but very controversial, and it took me like a while to decide what I was going to write about it. I was like, okay. But I did find something. But I want to thank you so much. It's a beautiful day outside, and when the new one comes out, let me know. And, of course, Cheryl's going to want to know, so you can do another blog tour with them. And thank you so much, everybody. Have a nice day, and bye.